Anybody who's had a chance to watch, hopefully, either the news coverage or is familiar with that particular event that happened, there's a lot of controversy that's been happening in West Ottawa, in Ottawa County, regarding the extent of religious freedoms. Yep, we'll pull that one up too. Go ahead and have a seat. And then I think we've got both of you guys have microphones here. And then we'll get on all set. And then I'm going to pull this down so we can see that. Okay, so in this ongoing conversation, I was probably curious more than anything initially when I reached out to Reverend Lewis and Bender Bones. And as I met with them, have had a number of bobas now in Holland that have become our favorite. I've come to appreciate both their intelligence, their care for their community, and was just astounded, as I always am, whenever I have the opportunity to interact with people who carry different beliefs than what I necessarily inherited. Because let's be honest, most of our beliefs are driven from what we grew up with, what was handed down to us. But I came to recognize that there are definitely people within our culture that are drawn to non-traditional communities. We were just covered in USA Today where they were talking about these forms of alternative communities. But predating communities like ours, there have always been people who have been on the fringes of these conversations. And I want to invite you this morning to engage with this topic and our guests with an open heart and mind, to be prepared to have preconceived ideas challenged, and to recognize that the way that we often think of things, the narrative that we tell around the way things are, is more often than not problematic at best or completely false. So welcome, Lewis and Bender. I want to start with a few groundkeeping questions that we discussed in pre-talk. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but it's important for the context of our conversation here. Let's handle right off the bat there. Do you worship a literal Satan? And what do you mean when you say you ended that invocation with "Hail Satan"? So tell me a little bit about what that means to you, and are we going out and sacrificing small goats and children in the woods? Is it what does that look like within the context of your community?
So we are non-theistic Satanists, meaning that we do not believe in any supernatural force or entity, including Satan or any of the characters as described in Jewish or Christian texts. We view Satan as a literal or a literary figure as described in different works like the Bible, like John Milton's Paradise Lost, Anatole France's The Revolt of the Angels, and other types of work that describe Satan as being a compassionate and misunderstood form of a quote-unquote anti-hero.
Okay, interesting. And then specifically, there's an aesthetic that you embody, and we kind of got hung up on this word this morning, but there is a certain way of being. We would have used labels like goth or metal, like in high school. You know the kids, the ones that we feel didn't fit in. You hit on this, but if you could just repeat what you said there, what is the connection between like this goth look, the dress, the heavy metal music and stuff, and Satanism? Is there a crossover there?
We just like to look good.
Yeah. Bender shared this morning that the Venn diagram between heavy metal, goth, and Satanism is like a circle. It tends to embody that. But why does this appeal to a mythological figure that most of us commonly associate with something else? what is the appeal to associating or building a religion around that? You, Lewis, you said in your invocation this line that stood out to me: let us embrace the Luciferian impulse to eat of the tree of knowledge and dissipate our blissful and comforting delusions of old. What does that mean?
So the Luciferian impulse is essentially a call out to Enlightenment values. It's about maintaining a level of understanding, you know, that, you know, we're all free agents, that we have freedom of religion, freedom of expression, that we are inviolable, our bodies, our minds are inviolable and subject to our own wills. It's a lot of the values that have been that maybe at one point or another have been seen or labeled as antagonistic or even you know, satanic or diabolical, but in, you know, when you actually look at it through pragmatism, they're actually just shared values that common people all around us share in our daily lives.
Which brings up another question. So if you're a non-theistic religion, do you have religious texts or dogmas? What kind of things guide how you operate and function as a community?
So we do have religious texts and dogmas. I wouldn't say dogma so much. We're not like very strong in proselytizing or telling people how they should interact with the seven tenets and things like that. But as far as you had mentioned
the seven tenets. So let's talk about that specifically. So those seven tenets are kind of like values. What does that look like?
Yes, they're essentially principles, that we try and aspire to, that we try and live our lives by, guiding principles that we normally use in our day-to-day living, just a way to be in the world.
Okay. We're talking specifically this morning about courage as something that the world needs now. We, as another community like yours, are wrestling with a lot of feelings and emotions. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like leading a community like yours, especially in times like this? How are they hitting your community? What kind of emotional resonance are you feeling within your community as you're leading them?
Well, I woke up on November 6th, and after the initial shock had passed, I knew exactly what needed to happen next. I got to work to begin organizing some grief counseling sessions with our community, started trying to create outlets for the community to be able to talk about what we're experiencing and to be able to find solidarity with each other so we can begin working through whatever comes next. So we, as a community, are reeling. Our values include justice and truth and compassion and wisdom. And we woke up to see that it appears that half the nation decided to throw those values away. And I'm sure many of you can agree that that hurts. And we're going to take care of each other. We're going to move forward and try to heal people both on a community level and an individual level. Our ministry right now is beginning to hustle to try to reach out to people in various communities that feel at risk or at threat. And we are performing marriage ceremonies for people. We are doing different types of affirmation for whatever type of religious services that somebody might need through a minister of our particular skills. We want to be available, and we want to just let people know that the coming tribulation is going to be, we're standing here for it, and we're here for our community, your community, whoever needs it. That's our mission. And when we woke up on November 6th, that was clear as day.
I encourage all of you, probably one of the best introductions to to the beliefs and the values that guide them are those seven tenets. And you can simply just go to the Satanic Temple website, and the very first about page will bring up the list of those seven tenets. What I like doing anytime I engage with new beliefs or faith traditions, I like finding what are the different areas that we have in common. Just in the last couple weeks, I developed a new friendship with a Baha'i practitioner here in West Michigan. And Baha'i, for anybody who may not know, is one of the newest religions on the world stage within the last few committee that's joining us here this morning. These types of conversations, these types of ways of how do we see the world, help us realize first and foremost, oh wow, we have so much more in common than we realize. And it also helps, from a neurological perspective, unseat old ways of thinking and break us into fresh new perspectives. Because when we encounter something that we would call truth in a place where we least expect it, we either have to say, is that truth falsehood? Or does my boundary for what I would call truth simply expand beyond what I thought it was before? So let's talk about these tenets for a second. So this first tenet, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy towards all creatures in accordance with reason. I happen to agree wholeheartedly with that. And that words like compassion and empathy don't often get are not often synonymous with Satanism. If that's that, maybe that's a branding thing that can be worked on. But why do you think there's this these preconceived ideas around it? And what does that value in particular look like within your community, specifically as you're seeking to courageously move forward in these uncertain times?
First of all of these tenets are, like I mentioned, are guiding principles. And so what they mean to each person individually may differ to some extent.
That's
we don't
fair.
Actually press and say that, like, that this specific tenet means this thing.
That's
and there's
fair.
No other
way
to look
I would
at
say
it.
That we tend to interact in the same way with our values. We talk about them quite frequently. And if you get 10 of us in the room, you may get 10 different perspectives on what that value looks like as it's embodied in this world. But maybe just talk about, from your perspectives as leaders in your community, what does that tenet look like specifically for your...
So one thing that I would say, at least for me specifically, is the first tenet is probably one of my favorite tenets, not just because it's the first, but because I tend to be a nice guy, you know, out in the real world here. But one thing that that one should always consider is, first of all, going back to the thing that you were saying about how, like, it's not necessarily synonymous with, you know, with satanic values and things like that. And I would address that by saying that, you know, it kind of depends how you view Satan or how you view Satanists, because, like all things, there's some interpretation as to, you know, what satanic values might actually mean. For us, when we're talking about the first tenet, we believe that it is a very satanic value to focus on love and compassion and things that actually build you up and also build your community up. The very end of that tenet actually says, toward all creatures in accordance with reason. One thing that I know Minister Bones has taught me specifically, you know, is that reason also carves out a space for compassion and reason for oneself.
Yeah.
You know, we do have to at times recognize that, you know, when our bandwidth is taken up, when we have, you know, given everything that we can, that we need to take a step back and also offer some compassion and empathy toward our own self. That is a very satanic value in terms of taking care of one's well-being so that they can go out and be the light bringer to the rest of the world.
you want to add on that. I want to give you one more question and then let you also jump on that perspective as well. Another thing that is kind of common is I'm guessing your mothers didn't name you Lewis Cipher and Bender Bones, but you've adopted those names. Is that just like, I think the example I used this morning is like Insane Clown Posse, you know, how you have the, you know, weekend festival with all the makeup and stuff, and then, you know, you're doing the regular desk work behind the scene. Why the name pseudonyms, and what does that mean specifically? And maybe specifically, how does that connect with your story of how you encountered Satanism?
I don't know what you're talking about. Mama Bones is watching right now. I'm kidding. Well, she is. Hi, Mom. So no, we were not born with these names. These are pseudonyms that we have chosen for ourselves, or oftentimes pseudonyms are given to you as a nickname and you adopt it into something a little more permanent. That's kind of the direction we went with that. So
is that similar to like when people either make the choice of being non-binary or choosing different names that fit their preferred identity or stuff? Does it have a similar concept of this was a name I used to be known as, this is a name that kind of embodies who I am now, or no? I'm asking that curiosity.
It's highly personal. There are some people who have taken on pseudonyms and then they have adopted their pseudonym as now their preferred legal name, and we congratulate and hail them for being able to find that and empower themselves through that. For people like ourselves, we do go by our government-issued names through most of general life, and have more or less a degree of being able to maintain general social experiences. Depends how much we dress up.
Yeah, and to be clear, I mean, none of these practices are inherently new. Almost every religious tradition has histories of people choosing different names or identities, but it takes on a different context. I think maybe the assumption is that you're hiding behind that in an almost anarchistic sense, where you're out there just like trying to, you know, poke the bear and trying to, you know, provoke reactions. Is this just all like a publicity stunt, like the Ottawa County thing? You know, was that just to get some news coverage and just make a splash? Like, why do you engage in those kind of things?
I call
you can it, both. Yeah, I'd like to hear both perspectives.
I would call it juxtaposition.
Okay.
We are important because we create a powerful juxtaposition where we are able to essentially follow the same kind of practices as any mainstream religious group and basically just tweak a few things about our aesthetic or the foundations for how we acquired our philosophy, and then apply those same rules in those spaces where general mainstream religious groups have been welcome to express themselves. And it kind of helps people show us who they are or what they are looking for as far as a religious group in a public space, whether you're looking for someone who can play the role and act the part of being virtuous, or whether your actions define who and what you are. And we are a group that defines ourselves through our actions.
So to go along with what Minister Bender said, I know that in the past, a lot of times our activity and our activism has been seen kind of as just a political stunt or a public stunt, or any kind of phrase like that. But I think one needs to understand again how we view Satan as a mythological activist, you know, in and of himself. He's a universal.
Can you use the example you used this morning in pre-talk about the first rebelling against kind of an authority figure way of seeing Satan?
So the way we view or identify with Satan is in the terms that, you know, we kind of view Satan as this eternal rebel or universal opposer against supreme tyrannical authority. He was the first individual, the first mythological being that actually stood up to the highest power in all the universe and say, your way doesn't work. It can be done differently. It can be done better. I could even do it better. You know, the God in this mythology being, or the authority in this mythology being God, saw that as prideful, and in order to punish that, you know, sent Satan to go live for eternity in the pits. And so kind of the way we see that, if you superimpose that mythological story onto reality, you know, it's very similar to what we do. Activism is a very big part of our religious and spiritual community because we see Satan in that same terms, being someone that stood up for justice even when he was labeled and demonized as a monster for doing so.
Mm-hmm. One other practice that engaging with people who think and act or believe function differently than us, is it causes us, or it should hopefully force us to take a step or two back to look at the things we believe and practice and how that experience is translated to a watching world. Anybody who watched the invocation, you know, heard the provoked response that something like saying Hail Satan brought about. And yet we probably haven't thought twice of the dozens, hundreds, thousands of times that in our lifetimes we've used overtly Christian, whatever Jewish, whatever language or that comes with your religious tradition, in and around people without thinking about that context. These are things that, and even within the different religious traditions, you know, I think of Shiva, God of destruction, and the important aspect of these anti-hero gods and mythological figures. You know, we, from a Western mindset, come in this very, very black and white. You know, God is the good one and Satan is the opposer. And yet, you know, when you think about the origin story and think about things, I remember thinking, you know, as a young man, you know, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, why is that a bad thing? And shouldn't we want to know more? So reframing that story in that context within a religious setting is so interesting. Talk to me about, let's go back to this idea of courage, and more specifically even bravery versus courage. What does that look like in your communities? Because I know that you have the role as ministers that you lead, but I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit and maybe just ask you to talk about the work and the activism you did prior to this election in your own personal time and why that mattered to you. Did you do that out of satanic values? What drives this kind of activism in the world?
So we are driven by trying to seek out and resolve perceived injustices in the world. With the invocation that happened in Ottawa County, we identified an area where it seemed like particular religious ideas that don't even encompass the entirety of, say, Christian theology, were being preferred over other ideas that were inclusive or, to use more modernized language, woke Christian ideas. And we saw that and recognized an injustice being done there and how religious, the perversion of religious values was being used as a way to punch down on people or to keep people from being lifted up in the way that I believe the Bible instructed these very same people to be doing. So upon recognizing that injustice, going to the county commission meeting, it was the day they did the their constitutional county resolution. That was a good time. thank you. So Yeah, upon seeing that, recognized the injustice, got the go-ahead to begin moving forward with planning an invocation of our own, and came in to deliver the message of, hi, we're here, we've always been here, but now we're stepping out of the shadows, and we're going to be representing our community out in the open here in Ottawa County. Yeah.
It goes without saying that the courage that both myself and Minister Bender had to muster up in both of those situations was it was up there. It was beyond the top. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, neither one of us did this for personal fame or personal becoming or anything like that. We did it because we did see an injustice in place, an injustice not just against our own community, but against other communities that weren't being represented in the public sphere. And so, you know, because we do fight for religious plurality in our communities, we felt that it was our responsibility to go up and say courageously, you know, stand up to people that were hostile toward us and assembled against us to say that, like, hey, bullies, to say that, like, hey, we are here. We are a community that's here, and we're part of a much larger, diverse community in West Michigan that doesn't just, you know, comprise a certain segment of Christianity. You know, these legislators and commissioners aren't just here to advance one particular set of their personal views. Yeah. And so, you know, it mustered up a lot of courage to have to, like, be able to go up and do that, especially when, like, I know personally, you know, let's just say that when it comes to public experiences, I'm more than happy to let my fellow co-head take the lead on those things. But considering that my home has always been here in West Michigan, it was only appropriate for me as a representative of our community living in West Michigan to tell our commissioners, like, hey, like, you're also my commissioner, and I, you know, me and my community warrant the same respect and recognition.
Yeah. And Bender, yes, thank you. Bender, you were involved in getting out the vote prior to this election and spent a lot of personal time on that. Do you feel comfortable sharing how many calls you shared with me the other day when we were talking about what? I think that gives a little bit of context that I want to talk about for a second.
Yeah, so in my personal professional life over the summer, I did work as a canvasser for a organization that was doing voter registrations to further progressive causes. So that was a big part that I was into for kind of a personal life activism, and they took pretty decent care of us through that kind of job. Yeah, kind of a heartbreak waking up on November 6th and just feeling that dagger through the heart. But, you know, it's fulfilling work, and it really did feel like a perpetuation of my mission as a Satanist to help people express themselves and to make sure that we are furthering our democratic and progressive values to make this world better for everyone. Not just equality, but equity and just well-being for everyone to the best degree that we can. And I worked for that all summer the best I could. So, you know, next time, give me 4 more years. I'll work a little bit harder for you guys.
The reason why I appreciate this is because, I mean, initially, I'm guessing, how about this? This is probably an interesting show of hands. How many of you have had more than just a 5-minute conversation, or if you have a relationship or friendship with someone who is a practicing Satanist? Anybody? We got 1, 2, we got 4, 5. We got some people, and they're good. The vast majority of us haven't. How I was kind of joking with them today is I was toying with the idea of, like, you know, introducing them as coming to meet your friendly local neighborhood Satanist that you haven't interacted with. But the cool thing is that as I did my part in wanting to first identify, you know, hey, is this just like some you know, anarchist weird group here that's out there just trying to get some media publicity. As I spent time in conversation with them and then with their community, I came to realize that, you know, you change out some clothes and a few practices and the way we talk about things, and we're pretty similar in a lot of ways. Look at, as a practice, look at our values that we hold as a community, and then go and look at the seven tenets of Satanism. Now, I'm not saying we all need to become Satanists any more than when I'm saying that a couple weeks ago when John Philip was here, that that particular strain and flavor of early Celtic Christianity, that's not the answer. The answer is not to say, hey, this is the one way we figure it out. I've come from places where that has been the rule, and trust me, it doesn't work. Pluralism, this open-minded idealism, is what we're striving for. And in times like this, we may find that our closest comrades and the people that we most identify with would be people that we wouldn't expect to. These types of conversations break us out of these ways of thinking and cause us to bring a new openness and hope to the world. Maybe in just like a minute or so here left, if you can kind of share some of your personal or your community stories of what has drawn you to the community that you're a part of, because this is a very small subset of the community. Satanism is not the preferred spiritual modality for most people, but it is for a lot of people, and anybody who hasn't been to a really, really good concert and seen people that dress like Bender there and have engaged with them, if you haven't, you're missing out, because the people at some of the shows that are some of the most obnoxiously dressed with the, you know, the hell metal, you know, all the stuff on, are just kind, loving, empathetic human beings with stories just like mine. So how does your past story, tell me about you, how does your past inform who you are now as a Satanist?
Mine's pretty easy. I did grow up in a very fundamentalist Christian church, a Pentecostal church, right here in West Michigan. You know what I mean. I grew up literally believing, you know, everything that I was hearing from the pulpit about God, about the devil, about, you know, just the nature of the world and everything. I'm nearly 40 years old, believe it or not. So I grew up kind of, my formative years were during the satanic panic eras of the 1980s and 1990s. So like everything that everyone thinks they know about Satan, like mostly came from that time, and it was scary. Like
we burned He-Man dolls in a trash can.
Cabbage Patch.
And as a kid, I distinctly remember thinking that I heard demons coming out of them. I know the panic that of that era. Yeah.
So as I got older, once I graduated high school and I ended up going to college, I ended up attending our local Grand Valley State University, a liberal arts college, where I was exposed to people outside of just my own church. People with different views and religious philosophies, and it became apparent to me that the way I thought wasn't necessarily the way that everything was. I started questioning my faith, and I think over the course of my college career, I became very atheistic. Once I started to, I took some courses in religion, because religion has always really interested me. Took courses in religion, realized that, you know, people were using their religious philosophies in ways that weren't necessarily just or, you know, appropriate. I lost my faith. It wasn't until several years later when I was reading a document comparing the Ten Commandments of the Holy Bible to the seven tenets of the Satanic Temple, when I realized that the seven tenets actually reflected the personal core values that I had developed in my adulthood so closely that it was almost like, it felt like it didn't even feel like I was becoming a Satanist. It felt like I am a Satanist, and just never really had the language or the vernacular to express that.
There's so much more we can go into. What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to tease up Bender's story, which will continue in the talk back there. And we're only highlighting aspects of it. It's important for you to know in these settings, we said this in there, we'll reaffirm it, no person or leader speaks for their race, their gender, their religion. We're not asking them to represent Satanism to us. But their stories matter, and their stories have taught me a lot in my role here in this community. And I'm constantly striving to discover ways to grow and evolve and move our world towards a greater sense of equity, of justice. And that might mean, and yes, I am in the middle of rereading The Lord of the Rings, so this is fresh in my memory, but alliances and partnerships are formed in the strangest of places. Sometimes elves and dwarves are best of friends and work together, and sometimes maybe you might have more in common with a Satanist than you do your local Christian minister. So thank you for allowing us to kind of like pepper you with questions. I know that there's a lot that we're asking you to represent and convey in such a short time. I encourage you, if you're interested at all more, to join us in the talk back afterwards, because that's where we get the chance to just continue to engage in this. And I want Bender to share a little bit more of his story as well. Thank you for keeping open minds and hearts. I want to invite, let's give our guests a hand. Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
I want to invite Eli to come back up.